Hello, everyone, and welcome to Touch 'Em All. We're your hosts, Mario.
And Raffy.
And we're here to talk some baseball today. Raffy, what are we going to talk about today?
We're going to cover the American League and a little review of 2010 and what to expect in 2011.
Awesome. So let's kind of jump into some of the awards in the American League in 2010. Okay. Let's start with AL Cy Young. Felix Hernandez from the Seattle Mariners had 10 wins, correct?
13 wins.
13 wins. Sorry. But he led the league pretty much in every other pitching category. So kind of interesting because you don't usually see a Cy Young winner that doesn't have 15 games. What are your thoughts on that?
Usually, you know, pitchers with large winning totals pop out and they get the recognition. For example, you had guys like David Price winning 19 games last year and CeCe Sabathia winning, I believe, over 15 games as well. And they should have, they were recognized in the votings, but when it was all said and done, Felix Hernandez got the award only because of the other statistics, which shows that winning the win total isn't everything. So
is this just not just a win for Felix Hernandez, but also a win for the sabermetricians who look at stats, at all stats, and not just wins like the purists do? I mean, kind of an interesting thought process here, because the philosophy in baseball, you know, the old school philosophy was pitchers that win a ton of games are the best.
Right.
But if you look at Felix's stats, he led not only the American League, but the majors as well, mm-hmm. in ERA at 2.27. He had 6 complete games. He had almost 250 innings pitched, over 230 strikeouts, a .212 batting average allowed, and a 1.06 whip. So couple all that and the fact that he went 5-1 against the American League East with, I think, a sub-1 ERA.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a Cy Young Award winner. A guy that puts up numbers, not just wins. Because I think wins are a little bit difficult for you as a pitcher to control. You can only do so much.
It's not your fault that your hitters can't hit. And in 2010, the Mariners could not hit. So, again, it's not Felix Hernandez's fault. And I applaud the voters for getting this one right.
Yeah, I definitely think they got this one right as well. Although, I mean, you did have some standout guys like David Price, like CeCe Sabathia, who, yes, deserved the award as well. But I think Felix definitely won this one.
He got 21
first place votes. I mean, kind of shows where people were. And another interesting statistic is 25 quality starts. Yeah. I mean, that's very impressive. So let's move on to Rookie of the Year. Neftali Feliz of the Texas Rangers, closer, 21 years old,
mm-hmm.
pitched 69 and a third innings, 71 strikeouts, only 18 walks. Did they get this one right?
I believe so. I mean, he was, first of all, he had been there the whole season, and I think that should be a criteria for Rookie of the Year. Granted, you have...
Taking a shot at Buster Posey there.
Yeah, you have your exceptions where if the player, you know, goes off in mid-season and lasts for the rest of the season, then perhaps maybe he should win it. But I believe there's merit in being in the major leagues for a full year. And just going over the numbers again, 71 strikeouts and 18 walks. I mean, this guy is electric stuff with a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. And he dominated the American League for the Texas Rangers.
Now, let's look at the two guys that finished behind him. Austin Jackson and Miami's own Danny Valencia of the Minnesota Twins. Austin Jackson of the Detroit Tigers, center fielder, had a .293 average. But, you know, he's not a power hitter. He's a speed guy, top of the lineup kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he had 10 triples, which was good for second in the National League, 103 runs scored, 27 steals, and 170 strikeouts, which was pacing the American League last year.
Yeah, that has to come down if he's going to be successful in the American League. especially for a guy with power, you can't have that many strikeouts. Very similar to Cameron Maybin, who he has the speed, but he needs to get on base. So
let's look at the strikeouts a second. He had 170 strikeouts, but batted 293. Uh-huh. To me, that tells me that he had a really high batting average on balls in play, yeah, and just got really lucky on some of those things. Right. And his speed is, I'm sure, definitely a factor. But I'll be intrigued to see if that batting average on balls in play comes down a little bit next year, and to see where those strikeouts are at.
Right.
So I think he's a good, solid player. I mean, made some great plays. Oh,
definitely.
I think he had that one big play when Armando Galarraga's near perfect game. I'll call it a perfect game because I saw a perfect game that night. But anyway. So let's move on to Danny Valencia. He finished third in Rookie of the Year voting, kind of an under-the-radar guy, hit 311, yeah, 7 home runs, 40 RBIs, 30 runs scored. But like you pointed out to me earlier, he led the American League in clutch hitting. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Clutch hitting is kind of shows what type of player, what type of hitter you have for your ball club. He hit 394. That's 28 hits and 71 at bats. Hit 3 home runs and knocked in 36 runs. For a rookie to lead the American League clutch hitting is, I think, something. It speaks volumes. It definitely speaks volumes. You're talking about coming up big again versus top teams in the American League, such as the Red Sox, the Yankees, and teams like that. Not only that, but you finish ahead of guys like Adrian Gonzalez, guys like Ryan Howard, guys that can hit and have done it for years and years. And to top them is something to talk about.
So I think a bright future for Miami's own Danny Valencia.
Definitely.
And hopefully he has another great season. I mean, to hit the way he did with runners in scoring position was just really impressive. Especially as a rookie, you know, the nerves are there. You're playing the big leagues, you know, lifetime dream. So definitely a stat that stands out to me a lot is that clutch hitting stat.
And playing in that lineup, if you can recall, Justin Morneau did not play the whole season. He was injured. So their team is basically relying on you. I mean, you have Joe Mauer on the team and Jason Kubel and Michael Kadire, but essentially you're one of the big boys now in the lineup.
And let's not forget future Hall of Famer Jim Thome.
Definitely.
And we'll get into the Twins and each team in the American League shortly, because there's a lot of interesting moves in the American League this year. So let's move on to AL MVP, Josh Hamilton. He led the league. He led all of baseball, actually, with a .359 batting average after missing almost a month with that rib cage injury. Now, although I think Josh Hamilton led that team to the World Series, and although they didn't win, but he did lead that team to the World Series, you know, is a leader on that team, just a great baseball player, plays with a lot of heart, a lot of emotion. I'm not so sure that they got it right on this one. I think Miguel Cabrera had a standout year as well and was equally deserving. If you look at Cabrera's numbers, he's actually probably the most consistent hitter in baseball since he came up. He's, I think, hit under 300 once in 8 seasons. And this year was no different. I mean, just another year in the books for Cabrera. 326 average, I want to say, close to 40 homers, had 126 RBIs to pace the American League, and kind of fell by the wayside because of Josh Hamilton and everything that the Texas Rangers did. Would this have been different if the Tigers had won their division?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, I think that's when you talk about most valuable player, you're talking about somebody. I think winning does have a lot to do with it. And if you go back, I believe, I want to say 2003, or when Alex Rodriguez won MVP for the Texas Rangers, I guess his stats were hard to ignore as MVP, but the Rangers didn't make the playoffs that year. And so I don't think that was correctly done, but the same falls here. I mean, Miguel Cabrera's team did not make it to the playoffs. So, in my opinion, they got it right.
Yeah, and let's look at Cabrera's numbers for a second. The last time he hit less than 30 home runs was in 2006 with the Marlins. The last time he hit below 300 was he hit 292 in 2008, and he hit 294 in 2004. That was his sophomore year in the majors after the Marlins won the World Series. He also hasn't hit less than 30 home runs since 2006 when he hit 26. And this past season, he posted career highs in slugging percentage and OPS. So, you know, I kind of think maybe they got it wrong, maybe they didn't, but you know, who knows? That's just my opinion. And so we'll see what happens. That's why we're here, and we're talking about this because we need to get stuff out. I'm so overly upset about Josh Hamilton winning the AL MVP over Miguel Cabrera that I lose sleep over it, let me tell you. So anyway, let's look at do you have the other guys on that list that won on the AL MVP?
Yeah.
Because I'm intrigued to see where Cabrera finished. Because now I'm really Cabrera getting
finished second.
He finished second. See, okay. Because now I'm really getting into this conversation. Now that I look at the numbers, I really think Miguel Cabrera should have won AL MVP. But that's just me.
Hamilton finished with a total of 358 votes, and Cabrera finished with a total of 262 votes. And then third place, if you want to know, Robinson Cano. That one's interesting. I think he was the MVP of the Yankees, and he was victimized by the lineup. They have a star-powered lineup with A-Rod, Tex, Jeter, Posada. You can keep going.
Yeah, and when you're fielding MVPs, it's kind of hard to stand out as an MVP.
You know, he's batting fifth. You're not going to get noticed batting fifth. And so I think he was definitely overlooked in the American League. And so, I mean, this will be talked about for years and years as to who should have won American League MVP. And, you know, even let's keep going further. A guy like Jose Bautista, he had a career year with, I believe, 52 home runs.
It was 52 or 54.
And, you know, he finished with 165 votes. Of course, he shouldn't have won. I'm not saying that. But he
only hit like 260 something. I mean,
yeah.
He really didn't stand. I mean, his home run numbers absolutely stood out. And there was a time when I thought Cabrera was going to catch him and maybe win the Triple Crown this year. But apparently that didn't happen. Anyway, so let's kind of jump into the individual teams, and let's go east to west like we did last week.
Okay.
Let's start with the AL East and the Baltimore Orioles. A-plus to the Baltimore Orioles. Definitely. I mean, not only the players that they added, but hiring Buck Showalter last year, bringing in Jim Presley. They traded for Mark Reynolds. They signed Kevin Gregg. They trade for J.J. Hardy. They re-signed Koji Uehara to strengthen that, to keep that bullpen strength where it's at, or hopefully make it stronger. They bring in Derek Lee. So now you have Derek Lee, a Gold Glover at first base. And I think they lose Ty Wigginton, which is a big loss for them. In 154 games last year, Wigginton hit .212 with 22 home runs and 76 RBIs. That's a big bat to lose. They also lost Corey Patterson, who hit .301 with 21 steals in 90 games, and that's a lot of speed to lose. And they lose David Hernandez. Why don't you talk about David Hernandez a little bit?
Well, David Hernandez got some time as closing for the Orioles last year. And, you know, he did okay. He was kind of like their, I don't want to say prized prospect, but he had a lot of potential to succeed in Baltimore. But if you're going to get, you know, a power hitter like Mark Reynolds, you're going to have to give up a guy like David Hernandez, and I don't see a problem with that.
Yeah, I agree as well. I don't see a problem losing a guy like David Hernandez either. Now let's talk about the coaching situation. They add Buck Showalter, who is a great coach, great baseball mind in general.
Definitely.
A lot of respect for him. And they also had Jim Presley, former hitting coach of the Marlins, who was released in 2010.
Right.
You have an article on our website, and if you guys, hopefully you guys check out our website, it's http://touchemallbaseball.blogspot.com. We post links to our podcast there, and we post articles that Rafi and I write. So why don't you take a little bit about your article here about Jim Presley? Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I couldn't have thought of a more perfect fit in Baltimore than Jim Presley. As Mario said, Jim Presley was the coach, a hitting coach for the Marlins from 2006 to part of 2010. And under Jim Presley, the Marlins finished in the top five in the National League in home runs, batting average, on-base percentage, and on-base plus slugging percentage during his time. So with a power-hitting team like Baltimore, when you have guys like Mark Reynolds and Derek Lee and, to an extent, Brian Roberts, Adam Jones, Nick Markakis, I could keep going. That's the guy you need in Baltimore, and I think they made the right move.
Kind of makes me wonder why the Marlins would let go of Jim Presley after finishing so high in those stats in the National League as a team.
Yeah, I think they had to move on because they were changing philosophies. If you've noticed, Jim Presley is more of that. It appears that power hitting, you know,
aggressive style
of hitting, and the Marlins are taking the more, you know, on base route, small ball route, if you will. And I think Jim Presley fits a more aggressive style.
So do you think Jim Presley fits more of that American? Because to me, the American League is that very aggressive. Let me hit as many home runs, power hitting style offenses. Although you do have those teams that play what I like to call the National League style, the small ball and the situational hitting, like the Rays, like the Angels,
right,
that do play small ball. So I think maybe Jim Presley is better suited for the American League overall as a hitting coach because of his philosophy of hitting. So those are kind of some of the big moves. I mean, and the losses for Baltimore, I mean, we'll have to look at wins above replacement, how many wins Derek Lee and Mark Reynolds add over, you know, a Ty Wigginton and a Corey Patterson. But I think overall, I think this was a pretty good offseason so far for Baltimore.
I think it'll happen. The only question I have with them is their starting rotation. They have a great young staff anchored by
Guthrie and Mattis.
We'll see what happens.
Exactly. Let's talk about the Yankees for.
Okay.
Let's talk about, because something interesting happened, and things have been happening kind of in the right way for us for the podcast purposes. Because last week we had the Matt Garza deal on Friday. We recorded this on Saturday. Here we are Saturday, and on Thursday we get an announcement that Rafael Soriano signs with the Yankees. Now, to me, and you and I talked about this earlier, was it kind of felt like the Yankees are pushing Rivera to have one foot out the door. And from what I've heard, I spoke with someone on my Twitter account that told me that supposedly Rivera picked Soriano as heir to the mound in the Bronx. And if that's the case, then that's fine. But I've also read that the Yankees brass was kind of split on the decision to bring in Soriano. So kind of an intriguing story here developing, and definitely the makes of a big New York City story.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens. But I think Rafael Soriano adding Pedro Feliciano, you know, giving him a subway ticket to come to the Bronx and leave Queens was interesting. Signing Russell Martin. Russell Martin really gives me an interesting thought because to me that tells me that they don't have confidence in Posada playing, you know, being the backup catcher. And it also tells me that they don't have confidence in Francisco Cervelli being the starting catcher, being the everyday guy. So what do you think is the deal here in the Russell Martin signing?
The Russell Martin signing, I think it was more of like a stopgap guy. I don't, you know, he'll put up the numbers. I think he'll be a better hitter out in the East Coast.
So you think they're kind of just bridging? They're bringing in Russell Martin to bridge for Jesus Montero.
Exactly.
Because Jesus Montero was in the Cliff Lee talks last year.
Right.
And I think that was the deal breaker for the Yankees. They didn't want to get rid of Jesus Montero. So hence they don't have Cliff Lee. Anyway. So Russell Martin, kind of a stopgap guy. You think he's going to be there, what, for a year, maybe two?
Something like that. I think, I don't know, I think Montero's ready. I mean, you know, he's put up big numbers in the minor leagues, and all this talk about, you know, trading him, not trading him.
Yeah, in Triple A last year, he had 21 home runs in 504 plate appearances over 123 games, 75 RBIs. Drew 46 walks, struck out only 91 times, hit .289, .353 on base. I mean, the numbers are there.
Right.
Does it show his stolen bases? I don't see his. Oh, he didn't have any stolen bases. So I'm guessing he's not going to be burning up the base paths anytime soon.
So that's
soon.
Fine.
Yeah, and your catcher usually does.
In a ballpark like, you know, the Yankee Stadium, the ball flies out of there. You don't need that.
And the Yankees really aren't a speed team anyway. They're, right. You know, with the exception of Brett Gardner and maybe Curtis Granderson. But, I mean, I don't know. What do you expect out of the Yankees this year? Because they lose Javier Vasquez, who didn't have a great year in his return to the American League. Kerry Wood goes back to the Cubs. Berkman goes to St. Louis. And Kearns goes to Cleveland. So right. Not really a whole, you know, not really big losses for the Yankees. But, I mean, what do you expect out of the Yankees this year?
With the exception of Kerry Wood, I think it was an addition by subtraction on all of those guys. As far as playing in the Bronx. Aside from that, they're the Yankees. I mean, they'll be competitive. They'll be in there. I don't believe they'll win the AL East, but you never know. Their lineup is still a force to be reckoned with. And, the question that I have is that rotation. For some reason, the rotation has been the question.
They just can't get their heads right. I mean,
when you have Ivan Nova and Sergio Mitre as your 4 and 5 guys going into the 2011 season, it's not looking good.
No, I mean, they have AJ Burnett, CC Sabathia,
and Phil Hughes.
Phil Hughes, who had a great, great year.
Right.
Do you think Jabba may make a return to the rotation?
I think they handled the Jabba situation incorrectly, and quite frankly, I don't think it'd be the right move to put him back in the rotation. And I was hearing actually that they're looking to maybe trade Jabba for a starting pitcher, which I don't think that's a bad idea. You know, his stats at Yankee Stadium, or with the Yankees, I should say. You know, there haven't been, you know, lights out. And yeah. So, you know, maybe it's time to move on. And maybe acquiring a starting pitcher who can, you know, go past 6 innings. In fact, the Yankees led the league, or were at top of the league in cheap wins. Cheap wins basically is when a starting pitcher pitches less than 6 innings and allows more than 4 runs. And still comes out with the win. And they also averaged their starting pitchers averaged 6 innings a start, which you're not going very deep if you're going 6 innings. And so I believe that maybe trading Jabba for a starting pitcher would be the right move. If not, maybe go out there for the free agent market and guys like a Justin Dukeshire or a Chris Young from that pitched with San Diego last season. I think those would be...
Pitched one game with San Diego.
Yeah.
Got the win. Had a 0 ERA the whole year.
Hey.
I wish I could do that. All right. Well, it's going to be interesting. The Yankees are going to be an interesting team next year. Let's look at Boston. Boston really, I mean, to me, was the team that stood out in the AL East this year.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, too, because in spite of all the injuries, they still finished third. And to put that into perspective, I think the Blue Jays finished at 500 or right above 500. And the Red Sox finished ahead of them. Right. I mean, they lose Ellsbury at the beginning of the season. They lose Euclid towards the middle of the season.
Right.
Still finish. I mean, we're still competing down the stretch for a playoff spot. Ended up losing that spot to the Yankees. And now they go out, they get Adrian Gonzalez, they get Carl Crawford, they get Dan Wheeler, Bobby Jenks, they re-sign Hideki Okajima, they re-sign Jason Veritek, and they sign Jared Saltalamacchia, or they trade for Jared Saltalamacchia, correct? Or did
the trade came last season.
Last season, okay. And
they they have him as a starter right now.
And they get Saltalamacchia. They lose Victor Martinez, which is a big loss, but if Saltalamacchia can play or they platoon with Veritek, then it's a tough loss, but when you add a guy like Adrian Gonzalez and Carl Crawford, you know, that's you more than replace those guys. Kind of the key losses for them were Victor Martinez, Adrian Beltre, Bill Hall, who played well for them last year, mm-hmm. and Dustin Richardson, because that was an interesting trade. Looking at the minor league numbers of Dustin Richardson, I don't know why the Red Sox would trade Dustin Richardson for Andrew Miller. Andrew Miller, to me, never really lived up to the expectations, and I go off on Andrew Miller in our last episode last week, so be sure to go in and
give download him a break. Give him a break.
I'm going to give him a break this week. But Dustin Richardson, I looked at his minor league numbers today. They were really good. I mean, ERA in threes, okay. In the low threes, had, like, more wins than losses. I mean, that's pretty good, pretty respectable.
Right.
So doesn't make sense to me why Boston would do this unless they feel they don't need him right now, and that very well may be the case. I think Boston's rotation is going to be very good next year. They have, you know, John Lester, Clay Buchholz, Beckett and that guy. I couldn't remember his name for the life of me. Interesting story. You remember our first fantasy baseball league? I drafted Daisuke Matsuzaka and Dontrell Willis as my first two picks. I'd never done fantasy sports.
You've come a long way.
And I've come a very long way since then. I mean, and here I am hosting a weekly baseball podcast where we do fantasy talk as well. Makes Go sense. Figure. so anyway, Daisuke Matsuzaka and Beckett, if they can get their heads on straight, I think that makes the Red Sox a very good rotation. Beckett was World Series MVP.
Mm-hmm.
Cy Young or no? Did he win the Cy Young one year? I thought he did. Maybe not. But very close to it. Had good years. Has had some very solid years for both the Red Sox and when he was with the Marlins. And they also have John Lackey, which gives
his first year with the Red Sox.
Left a little more to be desired.
Yeah. Going 14-11 with an ERA of 4.40. I mean, he needs to improve. He needs to improve if the Red Sox want to have a good, solid rotation. And, we'll see what we can get out of these guys.
Yeah. Let's move on to Tampa Bay. Because Tampa Bay, they lost some key players, but when you look at who they're starting in the field, it really wasn't that bad. They lost the big names were obviously Carlos Peña, Carl Crawford, Matt Garza, Soriano. They also lose Dan Wheeler, Grant Balfour, Jason Bartlett, Randy Choate, Joaquin Benoit, and Deonner Navarro.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are some heavy, heavy, heavy losses.
Right.
But they re-signed J.P. Howell. They add Chris Archer in the Matt Garza trade. They add Chris Carter from the Mets. They add Sam Fold and Brandon Garner, who both came from the Garza trade with the Cubs.
Right.
And, you know, the loss of Bartlett, he kind of had a down year last year. But the loss of Bartlett's not so bad because you have guys like Reed Brainiac and Sean Rodriguez, who are projected to be, you know, the starting guys up the middle. Mm-hmm. You replace Carl Crawford with a guy like Desmond Jennings, who is just tearing it up in the minors. You have Matt Joyce, you have Justin Ruggiano, and Dan Johnson, who are young guys, kind of coming up, got some exposure last year, but you know not very known names. And your rotation. Now with the loss of Garza, you make room for Jeremy Hellickson. And
still a good rotation.
Jeremy Hellickson, I mean, is a great addition to that rotation. Let's see if Wade Davis can get his head on straight next year, because he was very touted and very expected to be like lights out last year and didn't live up to it. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens. I'm kind of excited. The Rays still have a good rotation a rotation to be feared, and you know that's how it is. You still have Evan Longoria at third base, so you know that's the anchor of your team, and you know with the exception of you know those guys that they lost, I don't think the Rays are going to be terrible. I don't think they're going to be a sub 500 team. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but I think they'll finish third. And I think they'll be competing down the stretch, but I don't think they have enough to get in there, to get into the playoffs.
I feel like the leadership of Joe Maddon is important to still have there. At least they didn't get rid of him. I think with Joe Maddon at the helm, they'll be in good hands. They kind of remind me of like an older 2006 Florida Marlins, where you know they had Marlins just finished having their market correction done in 05, and so you had a bunch of young guys who, you know, some had major league experience, some didn't, but they surprised a lot of people. No, they didn't finish over 500. No, they didn't make the playoffs, but they made a lot of noise in the NL East in 06. So I think the Rays kind of resemble mirror that team. But we'll see. I mean, in my opinion, I don't know if they'll finish above 500. And I don't know if they'll finish in third place. But you can always hope for the best. And you know, we'll see what we get out of them. And moving on to the Blue Jays.
Yeah, the Blue Jays are kind of interesting as well. Because they had some big losses in Scott Downs and Kevin Gregg. I mean, kind of back end of their bullpen
right. Guys.
They lose John. They lose the leadership of John Buck.
Mm-hmm.
They lose Sean Markham, who had, I think, should, you know, I mean, I don't know that there is a comeback player of the year award in baseball, but
there
is. I think he should have won it. I don't know if he did or not. I'm not too sure. So. But Sean Markham had a great year after coming back from Tommy John surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And they lose Lyle Overbay, and that was a big leadership guy, too, in their mm-hmm. clubhouse. So with those losses, they add Octavio Dotel. They re-sign Jason Fraser. So the back end of their bullpen, not so bad. And they get back at Edwin Encarnacion, and that's kind of funny because they had him at the beginning of the year. Then he goes to Oakland.
Yes.
Oakland non-tenders him. Or designates him or something like that, and then he comes back. So I don't know, this is kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you really, and they also added, I don't know if you mentioned Rajah Davis from Oakland. You have a team that, like Mario said, hasn't really changed that much. I think the only thing that changed is a manager. Cito Gaston is no longer the manager, so you know we'll see how that turns out. We'll see how the coaching staff and you know the new regime in Toronto will handle that. The manager is actually John Farrell, who was, I believe, a former pitching coach of the Red Sox.
Yes,
and so you know he's gonna get a chance to manage in Toronto and. You know, I think we're going to expect more of the same at a 500 or a little bit above 500 ball club who, you know, is, I guess, hurt by playing in the American League East.
Yeah, I agree. I think if Toronto was in another division, they probably had a chance to win their division last year. Let's go back to Tampa a second because we didn't talk about the two guys that came in the we didn't really talk about the two guys that came in the Garza trade and Chris Archer and Brandon Guyer.
Right.
And I know I think the big guy in that trade was Chris Archer.
Definitely.
So I mean, what's so special about him? I know you were telling me he's got electric stuff and I'm not too familiar with him.
Okay. First of all, Chris Archer was the 2006 draft pick of the Cleveland Indians. He was then sent to the Cubs as part of the Mark DeRosa deal in 2008. Last year in the minor leagues, this is both double A and single A combined. He finished 15-3 with a 2.34 ERA, 149 strikeouts and 142 and a third innings. That in its those stats in itself just
you electric, know, electric stuff.
I mean, you can't ask for a better prospect coming out of that trade.
And I see he's got a fastball, slider, and changeup.
He's got a plus fastball, plus slider, and he's still working on that changeup. So
I think if he gets that changeup right, he's gonna be he could be like another Josh Johnson type pitcher.
Exactly.
Where you know the guy's got just nasty heat, and then if he throws that changeup, although Johnson's out pitch is definitely the fastball.
Yeah.
He'll bury that fastball wherever he wants, and
exactly.
We saw that in the All-Star game when he struck out Ichiro, struck out Jeter, and just said, "Here's my fastball, come hit it." but anyway. So let's move on to Brandon Gaio. Young outfielder, kind of a speed power guy.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me of like a B.J. Upton guy. You know, although the average was pretty good. He hit .344 and 369 at-bats. He was kind of injured last year, so he didn't get as many at-bats as he would have liked to see, but that's the type of guy that we're looking at, a five-tool guy who can field, run, hit, and, we'll see when he'll be called up. I mean, if you think about it, an outfield that has Desmond Jennings, B.J. Upton, and this Brandon Gaio guy, I think that's a pretty good outfield.
Kind of makes it a little crowded for Ben Zobrist.
Yeah, I guess you'd put him in the infield. You make room for him.
Yeah, I think if Reed Brignac falters, you'll see maybe Sean Rodriguez move over to shortstop, or you'll see Ben Zobrist at shortstop. So those are all the teams in the American League East. I still think it's Boston, New York at the top of the list there.
Mm-hmm.
Tampa third, Toronto fourth, Baltimore fifth. But I put Baltimore fifth with a little asterisk because I think they are going to finish .500 or better this year.
Yeah.
I think the losing mentality is over now that Buck Showalter's there.
Definitely.
They've made moves this offseason, and I think that they are the most improved team in that division with the additions that they made.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be intrigued to see if the American League East can all finish .500 or better, and I think that if any division in baseball can do it, it's going to be them. I think it's the AL East. So let's move on to the AL Central, and let's start with the division winners, the Minnesota Twins.
Okay.
The Minnesota Twins didn't really make a lot of moves. I mean, they re-signed Jim Thome this week, they re-signed Jason Krubel, and they re-signed Joe Nathan, who's coming back from Tommy John.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they didn't really have to make a lot of moves. Although they do lose Matt Garrier, J.J. Hardy, the O-Dog, Brian Fuentes, John Roush, and Carl Pavano still haven't been signed. I don't think they needed to make a lot of moves, though. What do you think?
No, the American League Central champs, really, you know, they've had that team set. I mean, you have guys like Morneau, Maurer, Kadir, Span. They did retain Kubel and Thome.
Delmon Young,
and the young kid Danny Valencia. So you see they have a nice core group of guys. And let me not forget the addition of Tsuyoshi Nishioka from Japan. This guy is actually a Gold Glove winner at both second base and shortstop in Japan. He's a high average guy. He gets a lot of hits, scores a lot of runs. He's okay in the power department, 11 home runs and 59 RBIs.
So more of a top-of-the-order kind of guy.
Definitely. He brings the speed that I thought Minnesota was lacking. They had speed in Span, and
that was about
that's about it.
Yeah,
really
Denard Span was kind of the speed guy for them. So that's good, because now that gives them a solid 1 and 2 guys at the top of the order for Joe Maurer and
mm-hmm.
Jim Thome to hit for, to hit behind, and I think that's going to be good. I think that's going to strengthen them. I give them an A for they're just keeping going. They didn't really do much, but they didn't have to at the same time.
We'll put the icing on the cake is if they were to lock up Pavano.
Yeah,
and if I'm not mistaken, they're close to doing that.
Yeah.
So if they get that done. I think they're looking good for 2011.
Yeah. Now, the White Sox made some interesting moves as well. They made some decent moves. They get Adam Dunn to fill their DH spot.
Yes.
What do you think Dunn in the American League is going to be? I mean, he's probably not going to be playing the field. He's quite the defensive liability. I think he's a DH, and I think this is it for him. I think he's a DH for the rest of his career.
This is a great fit for him. You talk about playing in at U.S. Cellular. I was about to say Comiskey Park, taking you way back. He's playing at U.S. Cellular right now, and that place is in the summertime. It's a launching pad, so I think he fits perfect, and especially in that lineup. You have guys like JP, Alexi Ramirez, Paul Konerko, Carlos Quinton. You keep going. And I think the White Sox last year needed that left-handed bat in the lineup. Sure, they had Pierre and Pierzynski, but they needed that power left-handed bat. And they got it in Adam Dunn. And I think they got the missing piece to that puzzle.
Yeah, I think this is definitely a good move for them. Re-signing Paul Konerko was a great move. Bringing back Pierzynski. And they sign, and they lose Bobby Jenks and J.J. Putz in the bullpen. Mm-hmm. But they sign Will Omen and they get Jesse Crane. So it kind of replaces those losses there. So I think the White Sox made some good moves. I think this is an A-minus, B-plus move, B-plus offseason for the White Sox.
It'd be interesting to see, I guess, Ozzie Guillen's status. You know, there's been talk about, you know, whether he's the right man for the job in Chicago.
I love Ozzie.
And whether, you know, last year there was talks about maybe a trade with the Marlins that would have sent Ozzie Guillen down here to manage. Of course, that would have been at the cost of Lomo or Mike Stanton, which I don't think the Marlins were ready to give up.
That's interesting, trading a player for a manager. Yeah. I've never seen that.
So, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what happens with Ozzie Guillen. I know that the White Sox are fed up with Ozzie's son, Oney, who I guess criticized Bobby Jenks for kind of, I guess, speaking his mind on the situation in Chicago. And, you know, Ozzie's kid keeps getting in the way, man.
Yeah, and what's the name of your young closer that replaced Bobby Jenks then at the end of the season?
Chris Sale.
He's got some good
electric
stuff.
Electric stuff, man.
Yeah. Let's talk about Cleveland for a second, because Cleveland, again, does, to me, don't really, I mean, they're just kind of lackluster, you know, whatever, we're just there, you know, kind of whatever, barely putting a product on the field to me.
Right.
They add Jack Hanahan, Adam Everett, and Austin Kearns, but I mean, those are guys that are just kind of, you know, veteran guys, you know, average players, nothing spectacular. They have Matt Laporta. They have
Carlos Santana.
Carlos Santana, their catcher, who's coming back off injury this season.
Right.
But I mean, I really don't see Cleveland doing much.
No. It's kind of like just going through the motions in 2011.
Yeah, exactly. They're just kind of going through the motions, and that's where it's at. Now, Detroit is interesting as well, because they signed Victor Martinez to a huge contract. Right. They get Joaquin Benoit to strengthen up that bullpen. They re-sign Magleor Ordóñez. They sign Johnny Peralta long-term. And they add Brad Penny. So to me, those are good moves. You add a veteran pitcher, add a veteran bullpen arm. You lose Gerald Laird, Jeremy Bonderman, and Johnny Damon is still, you know, TBD, to be determined.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure what he's going to do. But I think the Detroit Tigers just, you know, solidified their team even more, building around what they already had. Right. They didn't go out and make a huge splash in the offseason. They just, well, I mean, well, Martinez was the big splash. But they weren't spending a ton of money.
Right.
You know, as opposed to the Red Sox or, you know, whoever.
Their I guess, bloodline, if you want to call it, is that rotation with Verlander, Scherzer, Porcello, Galarraga, and Penny. Penny was brought in to, I guess, fill out that rotation, and you kind of hope for the best, you know, with Penny. But electric arms in Max Scherzer and Rick Porcello. So yeah,
and let's not forget, Verlander is just that guy's got filthy stuff.
Definitely.
So let's move on to Kansas City, because we talked a little bit about Kansas City because of the Milwaukee trade last week. But then now this week they signed Jeff Francis. They added Alcides Escobar. Mm-hmm. They signed Jeff Francoeur. They signed Melky Cabrera. They signed our boy, and you told me this today, and I was in shock. They signed our boy from the Marlins, Brett Carroll. Was Brett Carroll a non-tender? Is that what happened with Brett Carroll?
I believe he was a minor league free agent. I think that's what it was. And so the Royals extended him an invitation to spring training.
Do you think Carroll's going to win a spot on the team?
I think so. I mean,
he's such a good... To me, he's such a good player.
Yeah.
I mean, he works really hard. I just think that he got overshadowed in South Florida because of rising stars like Chris Coughlin, Logan Morrison, Mike Stanton.
Right.
So it's kind of hard to shine when those guys are there. We'll see what happens. I think Brett Carroll was a good guy to have for the Marlins, but mm-hmm. We'll see what happens. They add Vin Mazzaro from Oakland, and that was a good move, I think. Vin Mazzaro is a good, solid rotation guy. Alcides Escobar, good defense, has speed. If he can get mm-hmm. on base, that's good. Francoeur has been kind of iffy the last few years between Atlanta and New York. Hasn't really lived up to, kind of like Jeremy Hermita.
Yeah.
I can
agree with that.
They were, touted prospects and uh-huh. had, good solid first years, and then kind of fell off the radar after that.
Yeah, kind of fizzled.
Yeah, and then they add Melky Cabrera, which is, he's kind of bounced around now. This is now his, third team in 3 or 4 years? He was with the Yankees, then he went to Atlanta.
Yeah, just...
just kind of starting to bounce around, slowly. Seems like slowly but surely starting to become a journeyman.
Right.
And... that's kind of unfortunate. I think Melky Cabrera is a good, solid player as well. They lose Zach Greinke, which to me was the biggest loss for them.
I think they had to. He didn't want to pitch there anymore.
I agree. I mean, he won the Cy Young for a losing team a couple years ago.
Right.
Greinke wants the hardware. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think he was a right fit in Kansas City anymore. Yeah. Unieski Betancourt goes to...
Milwaukee.
Goes to Milwaukee in the trade with Greinke and Alcides Escobar. David DeJesus goes to Oakland mm-hmm. in the Vin Mazzaro trade. And Brian Bannister goes to Japan. So that was pretty interesting. I guess people really don't want to be in Kansas City. I can't say I blame them. No offense to you Kansas City fans. I know you guys have had a team around for a lot longer than us here in South Florida.
If I may, the big question here for me is Alex Gordon, the guy who was once thought of as the next. This name is slipping
the
me right
A-Rod?
Now.
The next A-Rod?
No, George Brett. Thank you, George, as the next George Brett in Kansas City, and hasn't lived up to it. He's been injured. He's now moved away from that third base position, and they have put him in the outfield. So, we'll see what we can expect from Gordon in 2011. Hopefully he does, improve and, play to the ability that he's accustomed to.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on. I think there's three teams that are going to compete, and I think it's not Kansas City, it's not Cleveland. I think they're going to be at the bottom of the barrel in the AL Central. I think Minnesota's going to win again, but I think they're not going to win it as easily as they did last year. I think Detroit and the White Sox are going to give them a tough, tough run, and it's going to be a good season for those three teams.
Mm-hmm.
Although the other two, I think they just kind of go through the motions and don't really make moves.
I think of those two, I think Kansas City is actually doing something about it. And, Maybe, of course not this year, maybe not next year, maybe not the following year, but maybe in, 3-4 years?
Yeah.
Maybe.
So let's go to the AL West and let's go to the Texas Rangers, because Texas lost some guys, but I mean got some guys back that I mean are pretty good. I mean, you signed Adrian Beltre, $80 million guaranteed. ESPN actually had a salary calculator, and it tells you how long it takes Adrian Beltre to make your salary. Yeah. He has to play a quarter of a game to make my annual salary.
Wow.
That's pretty bad. I wish I could go out there for an hour and say, all right, I'm done for the year. But anyway, and on the flip side, I would have to work 569 years to make, at my current salary, to make what he makes.
Yeah,
not going to happen. Anyway, they add Adrian Beltre. They beef up their pitching staff with mm-hmm. Arthur Rhodes. They add Brandon Webb, who hasn't pitched since 2009, I believe. They re-sign Frank Francisco to set up for Neftali Feliz. So, good moves here. They sign Yorvit Torrealba to play catcher. What I'm intrigued to see is, uh-huh. Do they re-sign Vlad? Do they re-sign Cantu? Do they re-sign Molina? The Cliff Lee loss, now after getting Beltre, after getting Brandon Webb, doesn't really seem so bad.
Softens the blow.
Yeah, it softens the blow a little bit. I'm intrigued to see, they lose Rich Harden, which is kind of a tough loss, I think, for Texas Rangers fans. He was kind of a solid guy in there, mm-hmm. in their rotation. And I'm the big question marks for me are Vladimir Guerrero, Jorge Cantu, and Benji Molina. Are they going to re-sign those guys? And we'll just have to wait and see, I guess, right?
Of the three, Vlad is most likely to return. I don't see Cantu returning. He barely played in Texas. And as far as Benji Molina is concerned, I think they signed Yorvit Torrealba as their starter. So I don't think Molina is going to come back. And the one thing a question I have for them is, you move Michael Young, who's again moving positions, is now going to be DHing for the Rangers as of now, which actually brings up a point on Vlad Guerrero. Where does he fit? And so, Michael Young was a Gold Glove winner in 2008. So now you're taking away that Gold Glove and putting him at the DH.
Well, why don't they put him at first?
You could. I mean, I guess I don't see. Well, they have Mitch Moreland right now, and Moreland, had a decent year. I think he deserves a chance at least in spring training to fight for his spot. And if that doesn't work out, then I guess Michael Young. I mean, Michael Young started at shortstop, moved to second base for A-Rod. Kinsler came up.
Moved to third base. And now he's moving again for Adrian Beltre. And
so
it's been kind of the story of his life, but he wants to be in Texas. And
yeah, it's an, they actually talked about trading him, and I guess it didn't work out. Whichever way, I don't know if the Rangers didn't want to part with him, or nobody saw a need for Michael Young, but. He looks like a Ranger for life. I mean,
he's number one on their all-time hits list, I think.
So, yes, exactly. So we'll have to see on that one.
Yeah, let's move on to the Angels, because the Angels, I put this as a key addition because they were really without him for most of the season, is Kendry Morales.
Yeah.
Getting Kendry Morales back is going to be huge for the Angels. I mean, there was no way that they were able to replace that bat last year. And all the moves they made, they tried to put Mike Napoli there. They brought in Alberto Callaspo to play third base because Brandon Woodward wasn't working out. And that's a question mark for me, is what are you going to do at third base?
Right.
But I think bringing back Kendry Morales, and I think Kendry Morales has learned his lesson, no more walk-off home runs. or the team has learned their lesson not to jump on him.
Right.
They add Scott Downs and Hisanori Takahashi. Hisanori Takahashi signed it. To me, I thought was a huge contract for him.
Okay.
Because, I mean, Takahashi, we had never really heard of him. I mean, he played in the NL East for the Mets, and we thought we would have heard of him, but we really didn't hear about him until last year. And he had a good year, mm-hmm. but I just I don't know if it was deserving of the $8 million. So, you know, that's just me. And they had Scott Downs to kind of beef up their bullpen a little bit. And that was a good move. Scott Downs had a good year last year for Toronto. Closed a few games, set up. So that was good. I think the big loss for them was Godzilla. Losing Matsui. And then I think they have question marks at third base. I don't know that they're going to be that team again. And
if I may, I also feel like, you know, they missed out on key free agents that they had been connected with, like Carl Crawford, Adam Dunn, and Adrian Beltre. I don't know what happened out there in Anaheim, but, you know, they missed out on key free agents, and now they're stuck with Brandon Wood at third, or Alberto Callaspo, or Meiser Stures, or whoever. And it'd be interesting to see if they do sign Vlad Guerrero, or whoever else is left out there, or Johnny Damon, to fill a void out there. But yeah, it's interesting because, you know, we've seen the Angels compete almost every year since 2002. So all of a sudden now, because it doesn't look like they're rebuilding, and it doesn't look like they're...
It just seems like they're going through the motions.
Yeah, and it's sad. It's sad
because... You don't want to get stuck in that.
Exactly.
Let's go to Oakland, because I think Oakland has really improved a lot.
Definitely.
I mean, they add bullpen arms like Grant Balfour. They add some outfielders like David DeJesus, Josh Willingham. They re-sign Coco Crisp. They add Rich Harden to the rotation. And they add Hideki Matsui to play DH. To me, the Athletics are going to be a team to be messed with in the AL West this year.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what happens there. I mean, they did lose Jack Cust, Jeremy Hermita, Jeremy Hermita, big deal. Vin Mazzaro, Eric Chavez, Ben Sheets, and Akinori Iwamura are all gone.
Right.
Let's see what happens with Oakland. But Oakland's got
that rotation
between Trevor Cahill,
Dallas Braden,
Gio Gonzalez, Miami's own Gio Gonzalez, and
Brett Anderson,
and now Rich Harden. That's a nice rotation to have. I mean, that's a solid, not big name guys, but definitely a solid rotation. And then now Grant Balfour in the bullpen to set up for Andrew Bailey and Brad Ziegler as well. I mean, that's a nice back end of the bullpen to have. So you really are going to see, I think, an improvement in Oakland this year. And
if they can stay healthy.
Yeah, and health is going to be the key for them. And can they stay healthy? And I think if they do, they're going to be a team to be messed with, especially after adding a guy like Hideki Matsui and Josh Willingham and David DeJesus.
Exactly.
So we'll see what happens there. Let's get on to Seattle, because Seattle made some moves, but they weren't huge moves, and they lost some players, but they weren't huge players. I mean, Jose Lopez was a big loss, I think, for them, and Ryan Rowland-Smith.
Mm-hmm.
But they add Miguel Olivo, so it gives them, not only a good catcher, but a good bat in the lineup. Definitely. As well. And Miguel Olivo has caught two no-hitters.
Right.
I mean, he knows how to call games. So that's good, solid leadership out of your catcher position. They sign Jack Cust, and they re-sign Eric Bedard. Mm-hmm. We'll see if Eric Bedard is going to pitch this year, because he was having, his shoulder issues or whatnot. And so it'll be interesting to see if he does play this year, and if he does, if he can be effective. So I think overall, Texas is still the team. But watch out for the Athletics. I think the Athletics have a good chance to finish second in their division.
Right.
I think the Angels will finish third, and unfortunately, Seattle's going to finish fourth.
With Seattle, a couple of questions here is they kind of signed this guy named Milton Bradley a couple of years ago, or last year, and where does he end up? He's not projected as a starter. So basically leaving him on the bench, and
I think giving the middle finger to the fans was not a good move on his part last year.
He's an interesting person. Yeah. And is Ichiro gonna stay with Seattle? I mean, it almost seems like a foregone conclusion that, yeah, he's a Mariner for life, but, I mean, it might make sense to deal Ichiro to get some young guys in there and start new, start fresh.
And what about Justin Smoke? I mean, he was, you know, the big piece in the Cliffley trade.
Right.
What do you expect out of Justin Smoke this year?
Well,
because he's been that touted prospect for, you know, a couple years now in Texas, and Justin Smoke this, Justin Smoke that.
Right.
There was rumors that Justin Smoke and Neftali Feliz were coming to the Marlins for Josh Johnson at one point. I mean, he's been touted around a lot of big deals, and they finally dealed him for Cliff Lee. And he's just kind of never really, so far, hasn't lived up to the hype.
Yeah, it's been one season. Maybe next year he'll have a full season with the Mariners, and he'll hopefully put up, you know, similar numbers to what people are expecting from him. I don't see him, you know, putting up 40 home runs, knocking in 120 or anything like that, but something in the mid 20 home run range, maybe 80 RBIs, 70 to 80, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think he needs to prove himself, and I think playing in Seattle, I think will be good for him.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of pressure in Seattle.
Exactly.
Not that Seattle's not a big market to play in; it's a major city, but I think it's a good atmosphere for him to be in. So we'll see what happens. I think Justin Smoke has a bright future in front of him, and just needs to get it together.
Exactly.
So anyway, we're out of time today. That's kind of our predictions for the American League. Next week, we'll be back with
Fantasy Talk.
Fantasy Talk, big time. We're going to do a lot of Fantasy Talk until spring training starts. Rafi will be going on the road for spring training. He'll be doing some Cactus League coverage
some
Grapefruit League. Hopefully, I'll be able to get up into some Grapefruit League coverage as well. Go check out some of the teams. So we'll see what happens next week. Doing some Fantasy Talk. We're also going to try to put together an email address, so if you guys have questions, fantasy questions, you guys can email us and we can kind of
try our best to
steer you in the right path.
Right.
So anyway, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you next week. Until then, keep touching them all and keep swinging for the fences, and have a good week, guys.